Welcome to the Property Lovers Podcast by the DG Institute. I'm your host, Dominique Grubisher, and this podcast series is all about giving you a competitive edge in your property journey. We'll be discussing little known strategies, tools, and information to help you add value and create wealth through property. So if you want to play a bigger game in property and want to use property as the vehicle to create wealth, and more importantly, what that wealth represents, financial freedom, you're in the right place. Let's do this. Let's get started. This is the key moment that you've been waiting for, potentially a watershed moment for you, because what Jay is going to share is absolutely, hand on heart, going to be life-changing when you implement it and adopt it in your life. So without further ado, here he is, the man himself, Jay Papasan. Hi, Jay. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Jay, I have some personal questions because I've got a big to-do list, like you said, and some of those things I really want to do and I should do. Some of those things I actually hate doing, and I hate, like, there's just a negativity and a big blockage, but I know I should. So is there any science around goal setting that you can set the goals to align with things that you like, and how do you do the things you hate?
Okay, well, at a certain point, if we're running our own business, we ask the question, how do we earn the right to spend the majority of our time in the things that we love, why we got into this business, and not the other stuff? But here's the other thing. It's called work, not hobbies. Like in hobbies, we get to make that choice to do the fun stuff almost all the time. The reality is that most of the time, to earn the right to delegate the work, right, we have to be doing something kind of extraordinary. Now, think about, in America, we call them executive assistants. If you are doing your job at a really high level, a company will pay another human being. And often in the United States, our salaries can run like on the low end, $65,000 to over $100,000, purely to take all the stuff, not necessarily you don't want to do, but you shouldn't be doing, off your plate, because they realize your dollars per hour, right, that you generate on these core activities is so high, it more than pays for the cost of having another human being. Gary Keller has 5 assistants like that. He's very clear about his dollars per hour. And if he knows whatever his dollars per hour is, thousands now, right? That if he's doing his core work, every hour he does that, he can afford to pay for several other people to keep him in that zone. And here's the distinction I will just make. One, if you're an employee, not actually someone who's self-employed, you need to ask, what can I do that will make me irreplaceable? How can I become irreplaceable to my boss? And then you have 2 choices. You can request that the company pay for that leverage for you, or you can pay for it yourself. And I would tell you right now, there are services out there from Cyberbackers to Fiverr, you name it. You can get a high quality virtual assistant to do repetitive tasks. And I mean, for 5 years, I had a remote executive assistant. And that's someone that doesn't have to be managed to the task level. They can be given projects. They cost a lot more money, but you can pay for that out of your pocket. It's just about managing your budget, because I want to be in my passion zone. And if I keep doing what I know I can do for the company, they're going to promote me, and that investment will be worth it. So that's a calculus. As a self-employed person, you've got to do the work to create a surplus in your business to be able to afford that. And that's always scary. And I'll just say this for you, Dominique. I don't know which one you're in. I'm going to assume entrepreneur, but I would just say the first time you hire someone, part-time or full-time, for me, I was worried, what if I'm a bad boss? What if I'm going to waste my money? And I started looking at their annual salary. Oh my gosh, this person costs $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year. Here's the reality. If they're doing their job in the first 90 days, you will know it's a good investment. In the first 90 days, if it's not a good match, you will also know it's a bad investment. So what you're actually risking is about 3 months of their pay. You just have to be disciplined and say, I'm going to make an extra investment. It's often extra work to bring that leverage into your life. So I have taught whole classes just on this, but I'm going to say one last distinction for those who are self-employed. You can do the math. Here's how you figure out, like, just go divide, I think it's like 22,000 hours, work hours in a year. Divide what you made last year by that. That's your dollars per hour, right? So if you made $100,000 last year, in my world, that's about $50 an hour. People will often say, well, I make $50 an hour. I can pay that person $5 an hour in the Philippines to do that job. And now I'm actually netting $45 an hour. That's arbitrage. I like that. The key is you have to be doing the $50 an hour work while they're doing the $5 work. If you just want someone to mow the grass or clean your home, that's fine. But don't mistake luxury for leverage. And it's okay if you're working really hard, you can have someone walk your dog for you. You can have someone do the grass for you. That's okay, especially when you're building a business. Just distinguish between the two. So identify not just what you love, but what your pay hours are. Those are things, the last things, Dominique, that we want to give up. Because that's where our strength as an employee or as an independent contractor or as a business person comes from. That's kind of often our one thing. And it may feel like work, but when we get good at it, it can actually be a little bit like play after a time. Because now you're so good at it, you're just trying to stretch a boundary. Anyway, hopefully that little monologue there, sorry, it's a soapbox issue for me. I can't tell you how many people will say, leverage is bad. Don't do it. You're better investing your own time. And I just feel like that's a trap. When people don't commit as business people to learning the skill of succeeding through others, they've trapped themselves in their personal productivity. And that's an artificial lid.
Yeah, I like it, Jay. I can see you've got Good to Great behind you too there as a book. Yeah, absolutely.
You're reading my bookshelves with me.
So yeah, you've got to be able to do that to scale. And while you were talking, I actually had an aha moment. And that was that my question was actually a really bad question, because why am I looking at what I hate? One of my mentors once told me, you can't move away from something, you can only move towards something. So I've even failed to identify the one thing I'm going for. I've just looked at how can I eliminate the things I don't want to do, which is a completely wrong focus. So maybe some tips around finding your clarity and steps you can take to find your one thing, because I got faulty thinking.
Oh yeah, I think that there's a great book, and I'm trying to think of it now. I'm going to turn my back on the camera. It's really bad. Yes, here it is. It's a very tiny book by Peter Drucker called Managing Oneself.
Yep.
And I'm going to steal an idea from him. He's one of the best managers of all time. And he used to advocate that people kept a diary. What do I plan to do today at the beginning of the morning, right? What is my important work? And at the end of the day, how did I do? And one of my takeaways from this very short monograph was, wow, like if you do that for a period of time, you'll start to notice a trend. Like, what are the days that I come home and I've really made a difference in my job or in my work and I have energy? You know, your roommate or your spouse, it's like, how was your day? You're like, it was great, man. It was really hard, but it was great. Like, it can be very difficult and also fulfilling and joy-filled, right? It doesn't have to always, like people say, when you love your work, it won't feel like work. I kind of call BS on that. It's still work, but it can be very fulfilling, and it isn't something that we want to run away from. So I would tell you this very simple habit I've coached a lot of people into doing. Just take 3 minutes in the morning. Start by identifying, of all the stuff that I could do today, what's the number one? And then do that first. Just take 1 hour. Do your number one. Now, everything else is after that. There's two things that are going to happen. One, you might start seeing that because you're doing the thing that matters most, you're actually earning the right to maybe hire someone to do the stuff that you just don't like to do. Or you'll start to realize, I don't like to do that because it's mixed up with these other things. Like for me, like on the days that my wife and I work out in the mornings, like I try to eat well. I'm getting older. I'm in my 50s. I can't eat like I used to. But man, if I worked out really hard that morning, if I want to have a cheeseburger for lunch, I feel okay. It feels like I've earned it now. On the days that I haven't, I just have a little guilt around it. And I think sometimes a lot of the work that's unpleasant is also mixed up in the fact that we're using that work to procrastinate from other things. So I would just say, start your day, figure out what your most important work it is, do it first. There's two things that'll happen. You'll either earn the right to take that other stuff off of your plate, or you might find when you can take your time and do it at your leisure, because the really important stuff is done, it's not as unpleasant as it was when you were trying to do it under pressure. I wish I had more science behind that, but this little book helped me kind of see a pattern, and I've tested it with some employees and it's worked for them.
Done. That's top of the reading list then. Jay, some questions from the community. Your top three mindset principles to create more focus and to get clarity.
So mindset.
Maybe just, you know, one.
Well, that's just fine. Give you a powerful answer. When we were doing the research, I remember looking to Gary at one point. Everybody we interviewed basically said it starts with mindset and it ends with accountability. And accountability means I have a coach, or I've chosen to be accountable to my partner or someone else, right? To bring that accountability. And I just said, is it so obvious? Do we actually need to address those facts? And we chose to, because ultimately all huge success begins with mindset and ends with accountability. So I just want to highlight that. My favorite book was by Dr. Carol Dweck. And if you've read her book, I really like books that bring a little bit of science to it. There's a lot of hocus pocus out there around mindset. I do believe that it starts with believing you can do something. And I also believe that people need to find their own answers. It's one of the reasons in our coaching, we do a lot of asking questions. People tend to believe their own answers, and they're often closer to the truth than you might think. And if you are patient, they'll learn the right way. So those are two big principles. And the last one is, I try not to spend a lot of energy on things I can't control. And that can be mental or physical energy. And right now, the world we live in, the headlines, the media, I'm a writer. I have to stay informed, but I'm confronted with a lot of negativity. Like, I just can't go crazy. I ask the question, before I invest myself terribly emotionally in this, is there anything I can do? Is this within my control or not? And if it's not, then I try to just kind of give myself a break. You know, we asked that question around Ukraine and we said, you know what? It would be irresponsible for me to leave my family and grab a rifle and go there. That's just not gonna happen. I'm too old, I won't do any good. I'll just see it in the way, but I can write a check. So we donated all of our royalties from our books that were in Russian and Ukraine. We just donated them to charities that supported that. And the moment I did that, now when I read the news and I'm distressed by something that I don't have a lot of control, I know that there's one thing I can do. And we actually just went back and we donated another $5,000. If this goes on, they're gonna bankrupt me. But that is the thing I can do. And I just try to always take my mindset out of the spinning wheel. What do they think about me, to what do I think? And that has been one of the number one things in this horrible time that has given me peace. It's just really, I mean, it's a serenity prayer, right? But it is that really important piece. If we give a lot of energy to stuff out of our control, we have less energy for the things we do control.
Great answer. Yeah, just focus on what you can do and what's going to move the needle. Jay, you spoke a bit about monkey mind and multitasking. We'll stick to one thing, one tip on how to stop multitasking.
Reality is, like, my kids love to bust me. Oh, you're multitasking, right? I'm a human being. We do it. We're actually programmed to do it, right? So don't beat yourself up. But I also try to look at my day and understand, what are the moments of truth for me? When I'm writing, I put on background music without words in it, because that tends to help me focus more. I have a sign I put on my door. I close my email browsers. I actually have a browser that has none of my social media credentials in it, right? And I use that for research, because if I'm tempted to go to Twitter or Facebook, I can't. It's like multiple steps. So I created a bunker for my focus. So if it's really important, I just try to remove the temptation. And I'll give you a non-work example. Do you have kids? You don't have to answer that. If you have kids, a lot of people I know that eat dinner, they'll say no phones at the table.
Yeah.
The reason for that is, while they may or may not be a good role model as a parent, they know that their teenagers have less self-control even. And if the phone's on the table, they're going to be looking at it instead of conversing with their parents. So they just remove the temptation from the environment. I can't tell you, we've had dinner at a family 6 days a week. Friday nights is movie night. We can watch a movie and do other things, but we have no devices on. We've done that since our kids were really small. And so for them, it's kind of a habit. But for us, that there's so much research that when you talk to your kids every day, they're less likely to have addiction issues or depression issues, right? And I just ask them, what's one thing you're thankful for today? And mom and dad could role model other things. So don't worry about it all the time. All right, obviously, if you're piloting a plane or doing surgery, do not multitask. By the same vein, if your life, the quality of your life, and then your life relationships depend on it, then don't multitask when you're on a date with your spouse. Don't multitask when you're reading a book to your small child. Don't multitask when you're doing your number one job at work. And the rest of the time, who cares? If you want to get on Twitter while you're waiting for a movie ticket, go for it. Make the time go faster.
Yeah, good answer. Thanks, Jay. And last question, Jay, just on that issue, the one thing almost a decade ago that was written, we've had massive change in the last decade, just an age of communication. The principle of one thing is timeless throughout history, but do you think now it's become even more challenging because we've got so many distractions and we're forced to be so reactionary, and then we feel obliged to answer emails and we can't leave people hanging and the tail's wagging the dog rather than us deciding our priorities and taking a razor blade to our diary and just focusing and doing something for us?
It's a good expression. I'll have to steal that. I'll say this. We did some research. It did not make it into the book. It used to go into our, when we did the full day workshops, we did a lot of work, research around work-life balance. And one of the things we discovered is there's a long trend here. A lot of people started increasingly going out of balance and reporting they were going out of balance around 2007. That's when it really spiked, right? That was the elbow of the curve. If you, maybe a tech nerd in the audience can whisper it, right? What device showed up in 2007? It was the iPhone. So before that, you had to be in a certain field to have a BlackBerry or whatever. But here's my theory. Increasingly with technology, there used to be very clear boundaries between the areas of our life, right? It's the work week and it's the weekend. It's the work day and it's my personal night. And now, because everything we need to be at work is literally in our pocket, within reach 24 hours a day, we weren't prepared to erect different kinds of barriers. And people are very poor at it. They don't create good boundaries. And so I do believe technology has created a whole set of challenges that most people haven't figured out. But you can train the world to live within those boundaries. And I'll give you an example. In real estate, the most successful people here are the ones who list properties. And if you're not very successful and you've got a buyer who wants to buy that property, you want to close that deal and you're calling that listing agent at 8 at 9 o'clock. I remember Matt Fedick was the first person, he's in Philadelphia, top agent. I called him because it was late in the day here and it was an hour later in Philadelphia than it is here. But I called him towards 5 o'clock and it was after 6 where he was. And I got his answering machine. And it says, hi, this is Matt Fedick. As a policy, we do not receive offers and we do not discuss real estate between the hours of 6 p.m. and 8 a.m. Please know that if you leave a message, I have time blocked in the morning. I will review your message and someone will respond to you before 10 a.m. tomorrow. And I called him and left a message and he responded during that period of time. And the lesson is we can create the boundary. Just like if we go on vacation, we set an autoresponder. If people are given a clear expectation of when you will respond, most people back off. If you say, I'm not in the office today, but I'll be checking my email, I'll respond, or my assistant will respond between the hours of noon and one, people won't be like trying to chase you down. So I believe in that. Say no through a system and create some boundaries. And I test it and I try to get our other executives. Gary Keller's the founder. This is a family business, right? It's a private family business. And a lot of people get a text from Gary Keller or John Keller, the son, who's also an executive here. And it doesn't matter when it shows up, they feel like they have to respond. And I'm like, you know, Gary Keller used to take franchisees to preschool to have lunch with little things of milk with his son on Thursdays. He didn't really care, but that was his time with his son. And he was either going to take them or they could wait for him. He's never sacrificed his family time for work. And he's not telling you you should. He's just going to leave you a message or he's going to send you an email. He's not telling you when to respond. That's your choice. And you can train the world, and you have to be consistent. If you email me after hours, you're going to hear from me very early in the morning. I'm not going to really make you wait. It just takes a few repetitions. You know, the truth is, if they really, really need you, they will chase you down if it really is an emergency. So I'll admit to at times seeing Gary Keller show up on my text message and I might glance at it. I want to know if it is a red, you know, alert or yeah. not. And if it's not, and it's 22 years and counting, I've been working with them, there's maybe been five of those. It just waits. And the next morning say, hey, I got your text message. I wanted to quickly give you a response. He's never complained once. So I just feel like we bring this urgency to things that aren't urgent. And I would just encourage us with technology, there is no boundaries coming from the cell phone. It's actually designed to break them down. That's how they make their money. That doesn't make it bad. That's just their business model. We have to take ownership of that. And maybe we need an accountability partner to make sure that we do. But it's a big test, and it's a big test of a quality of life.
Absolutely. Last message, Jay, could I ask? Thank you so much for your time and for sharing. Do you have a final message for our community?
I'll go back to, I mentioned it, you know, I showed you the back of the book, Our One Wish, right? This is a book for impact. If there's anyone in the audience, maybe you and Brad, if you've written a book, the economies of that are not spectacular. You're stacking coins, not big amounts of money, right?
Yeah.
And it's more about what you can do in the world. I want people to start asking that question. Just if they can build the habit and entitle the people they work with to really live their priorities. It's amazing when you know what you've said yes to, saying no to the other stuff gets a lot easier. I steal this from John Maxwell, the author. He once shared with me, you know, when I said I do to my wife, I kind of understood that that was a different yes, that yes meant no to everyone else. And I know that people get divorced. That doesn't always hold true. But when we say I do, in that moment, it's a different kind of yes. Asking that question allows us to bring more of these higher quality, I think it was fortified yeses that really kind of say, hey, we start saying no. No, I can't go after work. I've got something really important to me. And when you talk about a man or a woman, a person on a mission, like we get out of their way. We respect that. And we all need to be that way a little bit more. And I think we'd be happier. So I just say, start asking the question, figure out your big yeses and protect them. It's really rewarding. And it becomes more natural the longer you do it.
100%. I think it was Warren Buffett, wasn't it, who said that successful people say no to almost everything.
I could give you a treasure trove of quotes. I think Steve Jobs said every yes has to be defended by 1,000 no's, or maybe it was 10,000 no's. There's a lot of those out there, but really successful people, they say no a lot. I remember one year my wife and I were aspiring to get to $1 million in net worth. And one of our ideas is, well, we should just invite millionaires to dinner and see what they know. And the very person we called was our vice chairman of the board, one of the huge figures in our industry, a woman named Mo Anderson, and called him up like in January and said, hey, we'd like to take Mo and Richard to dinner. And her assistant called me back like an hour later and said, Mo is so flattered. She says, absolutely, yes. I'll get you some times. They can't wait. Well, the first window they gave us was in August. And Wendy laughs and she goes, well, I guess millionaires are really busy people. And the reality is, I know this now, Mo gets that request a lot.
Yeah.
And she always wants to say yes. And she's just dedicated a couple of nights a month where she'll go out with people that are not family and friends because she likes to mentor people. But she had to look out 9 months to find the next opening. She was saying no, but saying yes. And I just, man, successful people, if we just study what they do, there's a lot of tips there for all of us.
Powerful stuff. Well, thank you so much, Jay. Thanks for your time and thank you for sharing those awesome principles that will be life-changing. And we're all going to dig deep now and start applying them.
I wish you lots of success and thank you again for having me.
If you're enjoying this podcast, we want to invite you to join the Property Lovers Facebook group. To find the group in Facebook, just search for Property Lovers. You'll see the group banner, which has the word Property Lovers Hub on it. It's a community for property lovers in Australia. And just like this podcast, it's been created to give you a competitive advantage so you can get superior results in property. Please come and join us today. That's it for today, but really looking forward to giving you more tools, more strategies, more support, and a competitive advantage when it comes to property in our next episode.